spoiler, Belle falls in love with Mrs. Potts.
Oh, shit. That's the explicit gay moment that was building up the whole time. That's why Russia banned the movie.
Knew it.
Doug.
I'm going to McDonald's right after this show. I'm going to get me 60 chicken McNuggets. I'm going to eat them all in one bite. I'm going to combine them all into one super nugget and deep fry it.
We used to do that when I worked there when I was like 17. We'd put a bunch of them together and like stick them together and deep fry them together. And it would be basically like some giant nugget.
That sounds disgusting. That sounds horrible.
For the most part, I will not lie, I did not dislike this version of the film. I thought it was fine. It just didn't do enough to separate itself from the original and being its own thing. And it also didn't stay as true to the original to make me love it as much as that film. Oh, come on. Give me a break, will you? Five stories straight down. There wasn't no blood in the body. No shit. It was all over the pavement. All right, now listen to me. Listen. There ain't no bat. You should have pulled a gun on that kid, man. Hey, you want your cut of this money or not? Now shut up. Shut up.
Drinking, Drano.
You're supposed to have an efficient police department. And yet you can't catch a third-rate hoodlum who masquerades as a monkey.
Game over, man. Game over.
No. Go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Hey, buddy, you gonna eat that sausage?
Am I the only one around here who gives a shit about the rules?
Ladies and gentlemen,
your complete attention. If you please.
Welcome to the Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 90 of the Epic Film Guys Podcast for Thursday, the 23rd of March, 2017. 9-0, Justin. We are 10 episodes from the big 100. I am Epic Film Guy Nick.
I'm Epic Film Guy Justin, and to be honest with you, Nick, I can't believe that I've actually spent this much of my personal time sitting down talking to you about movies. Well, for the most part about movies. I mean, sometimes you like to talk about personal things, and sometimes we have visitors that like to totally ruin our lives. But hey, 90 episodes. So that means how many hours that I've sat down wasting my life away? Oh, man. But hey, at least we have some people that care about this thing. We do have people every week, like our awesome listeners out there that really make it worth all the while.
And a bunch of awesome people that have joined us once again in the live stream over on YouTube. Thank you all very, very, very much for being here with us as we record this Sunday evening. And Justin, we're not alone tonight. We are joined by a very, very, very wonderful friend of the show, another Epic Film Guy. And I think you know who I'm talking about. Loy Sauce is in the house.
I am in the house, as they say.
Dog.
No. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brian. Not that long ago, you kind of proclaimed a really strong statement about yourself. What was that statement again? You were the something of podcasting? I don't remember exactly what it was.
The god of podcasting, yes.
Oh, that's correct, yes. Well, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, we have the god of podcasting, Mr. Loy Sauce, on the regular show. Usually you hear him and I myself talk about stupid, silly horror films on our B-side segment. But, you know, lately we've been kind of busy. But be prepared. Power Rangers is coming out. Is it this week, Brian? It's this week, yes, right.
It's this week, yeah.
Man. And so we might have something Power Rangers related coming your way at some point. You never know. Ooh, but
Go. All right. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. So why don't we go ahead and first things first, we will jump right into our thumbs of the week.
Thumbs up their asses. Thumbs up their asses.
I love it.
Son, this is what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass.
I love it.
Two very enthusiastic thumbs up.
Shut up. Jesus Christ, man. What the hell is wrong with you? Please just shut up. Fuck!
All right, and Justin, why don't you go ahead and kick over to our Facebook feedback, and anybody on the stream, if you have any thumbs, please go ahead and chime in with them now, and we'll get to them after this part.
And I'm going to jump right in with one of the first comments there from Paul of the Countdown Podcast, who we had the great opportunity to sit down with last night and do our episode with them, Best and Worst of 1992.
Absolutely loved it.
So that was a huge ton of fun. But it said, thumbs up to having the Epic Film Guys on the show and being able to discuss 4K Ultra HD releases with Justin. Thumbs down to having less time to edit due to arrival of said 4K Ultra HD TV. Smiley face with a wink. Awesome, Paul. Yeah, I definitely had a great time talking with you about that. Jared Taylor, hardcore super fan of the show and good friend, said thumbs up and down, never being able to go home again. That doesn't really sound too great, man. I'm sorry to hear that. Director Brennick, thumbs up, not listening to the critics about Iron Fist. Thumbs down, post-game completion depression. Sorry, Dan. Your thumbs up for liking Iron Fist is cool and everything, but that show looks stupid as shit to me, so I'll never be watching it. But.
I just saw on Twitter someone released a clip of a fight scene from that show with something like 56 cuts in a 30-second clip of just the fight scene. And just like the editing of that show just looks like so obnoxious. And I wouldn't be able to watch it if all of the action scenes are shot like
so
that.
It's edited more obnoxiously than Resident Evil The Final Chapter was, is what you're telling me.
Well,
nobody else
I didn't
saw
see Resident
Evil, the final chapter.
I don't know. You might be one of the only people in the world that saw
But that's exactly how the action scenes were edited in that. They were the cuts were so fast you literally could not tell what was going on.
That's infuriating.
Yeah, it was. It was just like I was having the discussion on Twitter with somebody today. I was like, I didn't go to it for plot, but for God's sake, I just wanted to enjoy something about it, and it went out of its way to insult every sense I have.
So thumbs down to Resident Evil, the final chapter, then.
Yeah, that goes without saying every week.
And we got a thumbs up from Patrick Sherwood, the Hopester's biggest fan. Thumbs up for me buying a blue snowball ice microphone. Thumbs down to excessive amounts of actual snow. Patrick, what do you got planned there? Is there a podcast that's being created that we don't know about? Something's happening.
I think he was talking about doing something music related with somebody. So yeah, definitely cool, let us know once that lands. We'll be happy to spin a promo for you or, you know, plug you on the show, whatever the case may be. We do have some other feedback in the chat right now. DN says thumbs down to Iron Fist all the way down. Justin from So I Married a Movie Geek says thumbs up to Brennick's thumbs. And that's pretty much it. And any other feedback on Facebook, Justin?
No, but I did want to, you know, segue from Patrick's thumbs and give him two huge thumbs up for the amazing gift that I got in the mail that was actually addressed to none other than the Hopester. Thank God he wasn't here to pick up the package, but he went out of his way, Mr. Sherwood, and he made me an Epic Film Guys pint glass with our logo on it, knowing that it's something that we've had in the works for quite some time, you know, so we could have it available for people to purchase. But he actually bought some and he sent one my way, and it was awesome. It's fantastic. So thank you so much for your support, and thanks for throwing that out our
way. Well, way to steal my thunder, Justin, because I also wanted to give Patrick a huge thumbs up for my Epic Film Guys pint glass, which I'm actually not drinking out of tonight. I'm drinking out of my giant boot because I wanted to put three beers into one cup.
You're such a lush, three, man.
Jeez. Three beers, one cup? That sounds...
It's kinky, right?
Yeah. Reminds me of a video I once watched.
Point.
Mm-hmm. All right. We do have a little bit of feedback over on Twitter, so let me go ahead and jump over to that. Comic Confidential, they said a big thumbs up to Iron Fist so far and a massive thumbs down to critics for calling it messy, boring, and racist. And Podcast with No Aim said a great big middle finger to the Beauty and the Beast remake. Practically a shot-for-shot remake with any changes being worse, but I would give Disney a thumbs up for standing by the gay scene and pulling it entirely from Malaysia because of it.
Thumbs up to another Beauty and the Beast-related thing. One of the positive additions to the new Beauty and the Beast is the new song called Evermore, and thumbs up to that song because I've been singing it in the shower for the past week. It's my go-to shower song, so it's a beautiful song, and I'll get into why later on.
Awesome.
All right. So, Justin, what else do you have to say for thumbs this week?
For me, nothing much, really. I delved into some O.J. Simpson stuff again. I finally finished Ryan Murphy's show, American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson. I started it a long time ago and then just stopped watching. So I finished it. And then I rewatched the Golden Globe winning documentary series about O.J. Simpson as well. It's like literally 7 hours long. And I've already watched it a couple months ago. And I watched it again today with my daughter. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. Other than that, You know, it was a relaxing weekend. We did that awesome crossover with the Countdown podcast last night. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was an
and I'm going to see one of my wife's favorite bands tomorrow night in Washington, D.C. at the Drive-In. They're doing a reunion tour, which we were supposed to go to last year. They canceled last minute, so we got our tickets for that, for this show, the updated show, for tomorrow.
All righty. Well, Dan over in the chat says thumbs down to Justin hating everything Netflix.
I don't hate everything Netflix. I like quite a bit of stuff. All the 4K stuff, the 4K nature stuff is fantastic on Netflix. So, I do not hate everything on Netflix.
I've got quite a bit of feedback that I wanted to offer this week. I first off have a huge thumbs up and a thumbs down to the blizzard Stella that just hit a huge, huge area, not just my area. We got over 2 feet of snow up here. I fucking love snow. I hate people that bitch about snow. So a huge thumbs up to the blizzard and a huge thumbs down for people bitching about the blizzard. There are tons of places.
Dude, they live in fucking New York, man. They live in New York.
There are tons of places in the world where it doesn't snow. Pack your shit into a U-Haul and go there. I hate it. Every winter, it never fails. People complain about the cold weather and the snow literally all the time. It's so irritating. There's places that don't have it. Move. Go away. Let me enjoy it peacefully. Thank you. I absolutely loved it. There was like just a mountain of stuff on top of my car. I also have a thumbs down, Justin, to everyone's knee-jerk reactions to the Matrix news. Now, this is something that you posted to the page because the Hollywood Reporter got an exclusive from Warner Brothers, and they posted it as there's a reboot or a remake of The Matrix in the works, and everybody lost their shit, even though the article completely said they had no idea what the project was. They just knew that it was something involving The Matrix. Well, because of that reaction, the writer for it came out and was like, guys, it's not going to be a reboot or a remake. It's just going to be within that universe. Everybody lost their motherfucking shit over this thing. Jesus Christ. Dan says thumbs down to Justin for being Justin.
Thumbs up for our live stream being something for Dan to utilize in his free time of doing nothing with his life.
This is what he's doing. All right. Huge thumbs down to the following. This is a show that my wife just started watching on Netflix. Speaking of which, it's a colossal fucking piece of shit. It's very well acted. I'll say it's very, very well acted, but the only reason, it's about like this cult who's being chased by the FBI. The only fucking reason the cult ever does anything is because the FBI is perpetually stupid, literally every fucking episode. Every goddamn character that's in the FBI is literally just ignorant as fuck. So I sit here at my desk because we're in the same room. She's watching TV and I'm working on podcast stuff or whatever. And it's just, oh my God, it's just terrible. Don't ever watch it, please, for the love of God. All right, and we've got to play this because I've got to have something I got to get off my chest right the fuck now.
Shut up! Shut up!
No!
Shut up!
No!
Wrong!
Now shut the fuck up and let me do my
shut
job!
Shut up! Stop it, you wing, you baby! Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
All right, I am going to give a massive, colossal fucking middle finger to some asshole over on Twitter. Now, like, I get it. And Loisos hates the DCEU too, so he's not as bad as this guy, though. But this asshole on Twitter who hates the DCEU so much, he literally fucking talks about it every day. I swear to fucking God, he just has no life outside of bashing it. Actually insinuated that Live by Night was a worse film because Affleck was cast as Batman. He had, like, Batman vs. Superman wrapped production in December 2014. Affleck had 2 fucking years between that and the release of Live by Night to make a decent film and didn't fucking do it. He released a piece of goddamn shit in which he basically reads at the audience for 2 fucking hours in the theater.
I'm confused. So he thought that Live by Night was in direct correlation with Batman versus
exactly.
Superman.
Exactly. He directly stated, oh, well, I bet it would have been better if Affleck hadn't been cast as Batman. Like, because Affleck was cast as Batman, Live by Night was a worse film.
That doesn't make sense to me.
What if he meant
was that he was taking so much time preparing for the Batman role and preparing for what he was going to be doing as Batman that he didn't put enough effort into writing the script and directing.
I mean, Batman Superman wrapped in December 2014. Live by Night came out in December 2016. That's two fucking years.
Yeah, but when did he write the script, though? When has it been documented that when he actually sat
he
down
took a year and a half to write the script, according to him.
So there's no real way to know. I mean, I don't know.
According to him, it took him a year and a half to write the script for Live by Night. According to him.
Okay.
But even still, like, scripts sit in development for a decade, two decades. It's irrelevant. It's absolutely a moot fucking point. It's just, it's people going out of their way so badly to hate anything and everything about the DCEU that they will blame everything that's inextricably linked to it. And it's fucking ridiculous. And I fucking hate this fucking bullshit. Go fuck yourself, you motherfucking asshole. Fuck off. Seriously. The end.
That's a lot of hate.
It drives me insane because, like, I get it if you don't like it. It's fine if you don't fucking like it. If you think they're pieces of shit, whatever. But, like, literally, like...
They are.
Have a life... Thank you, Loy Sauce. Have a life outside of fucking hating these movies. Like, literally, like... Because he and I got into an argument about Live by Night, which he rated, like, a 3.5 out of fucking 5 or something like that. And it's literally going to be the worst movie of the year for me. Nothing is going to be worse than Live by Night because it's so fucking terrible. And, like, I just, no, I, yeah.
But nothing will ever be as good as motherfucking monster trucks, though. God damn, it's going to be the movie for me. Ultra 4K Blu-ray coming out soon. I can't wait to pick that shit up.
No, the 4K was canceled.
What?
Yeah, just the regular Blu-ray.
All right, never mind. I'm not buying it then. Damn it. I wanted to see I'm Creature, definitely... that Ultra 4K Blu-ray, you know, whatever, god damn it, with the HDR and...
I'm absolutely going to buy it on the first day. And, you know, we're not saying this ironically. I don't think we... I think you talked about it on the podcast, Justin, but
unironically... The fact that we saw a D-Box version of Monster Trucks?
Yeah, man, in 3D, in D-Box, the most ironic format possible. And we unironically loved it. I liked Monster Trucks, like I have to say. I'm going to tell it on the mountain here.
Do it up,
Monster Trucks is a good movie.
I bet it's better than Live by Night.
I'm sure.
I took a shit this afternoon.
We
was better
had
than Live
fun
by
watching
night.
It. You didn't have any fun watching Live by Night. All you wanted to do is go home and shoot yourself in the head after watching it. So it is what it is. But hey, moving on from that, does anyone else have any thumb-related stuff?
No, we're done with thumbs. Let's go ahead and jump over into What Are You Drinking?
I'm back! Puke and rally! Yeah. Woo! Give me a beer!
And I'm sure that since Loy Sauce is probably not... Are you drinking anything? Are you drinking water, orange juice? Some mother's milk? Do you have anything?
I think you know exactly what I'm drinking.
Oh, you're drinking that Pussy Man's beer, aren't you, bro?
It's not Pussy Man's beer.
Well, what the hell is it then? Let's hear it. What is it? What do you got? What do you got guzzling down your gullet this evening?
I'm going to let you guess.
Dos Equis.
Yeah, man. My favorite.
Dos Equis is legit. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it's not pussy. If I were drinking like a Miller Lite, that would be pussy.
I really don't mind that you're drinking the Dos Equis. Whenever I go to eat Mexican food, I like having a Dos Equis with a lime in it. It's just like drinking a soda to me. It's not like I don't really consider it beer, but you know, I know it gets you hammered all the time, so it works for you.
Natty Light, Jesus Christ, Jared.
Well, I'm drinking a beer. I got to talk about this because my wife surprised me with this. She went out shopping to the organic food store, and it's the same food store that I usually get good beers at. And I said, surprise me with, you know, just a large bottle of one beer. After last night with the countdown, I can't do like a full six pack. I'm like still nursing myself from last night. But what I'm drinking is the Stillwater Pineapple Fields India Pale Ale with pineapple and white sage. This baby is 6.7% alcohol by volume and 60 IBUs. I love my wife for going, you know, out of her way to get me this beer and for picking something completely different. Unfortunately, this beer is pretty gross. It really tastes like they just put like a pineapple in it after it was brewed and let it sit there and sour. It's extremely sour. I mean, I don't know how long it's been sitting there, whatever else, but I'm going to drink through it, but I love my wife and everything for her efforts, but not a good beer.
Ooh.
But Nick, what do you got guzzling down your gullet this evening?
Inspector Dill Pickle. Justin, I am drinking. This is actually beer. I don't know if you had this on the show last week or not. I know you've had it. And I actually found it at a little store over in Apalachin today because I went over to a buddy's house of mine. And Dave actually correctly guessed this over in the live stream. I am drinking Southern Tier's New School IPA. And I gotta say, I like
how
it.
How is it? Because I was debating on getting that.
It's pretty refreshing. It's got a, just kind of a clean, crisp hop finish to it. And it's got, like, it says it's got a tropical twist. I guess right up front, there's a little bit of a tropical fruit kind of flavor. It's not overpowering. It's very easy. Like, if you wanted to get somebody any IPAs, I would say this is the kind of IPA you would give them, because it's not something that's overly powerful. It's definitely got a hoppy bitterness to it that a classical IPA fan would enjoy, but not anything that's like, oh my God, that's so bitter, I'm going to die. So yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. Like I said, just kind of light and refreshing, almost a session IPA, like almost that kind of refreshing, like, ooh, I really, really enjoy that. I am. I'm a big, big fan of it. Really love it. I grabbed a six-pack of it, and I filled up my boot.
How's the mouth feel?
The mouth feel.
Is it good? Is it great? Is it just okay? Our fans, our live stream listeners, they want to know how that mouth feel is. Get up
out of here with my eye holes. Yeah, the mouth, it's absolutely fantastic. I am a big, big fan of it. Welcome to the stream, David the producer. All right, so we are going to go ahead, and Justin and Loy Sauce are going to do a featured review for Beauty and the Beast in our next segment. I will spend some time over in the chat chatting with our fans. So thank you very much, everybody who's still watching with us on the live stream. But for now, we're going to go ahead and jump into a clip from this week's featured podcast. And because we just did a crossover with them last night, as Justin already mentioned, this week's featured podcast will be none other than our brothers from Down Under, down in Perth, Paul and Wayne from The Countdown. We played their promo literally every single week for more than a year, and we were talking about it yesterday when we did the crossover, but we figure that there's a Venn diagram that is our collective listening pool, and the very, very sliver on the outsides is the people that just listen to one or the other. I think pretty much most of our audience is a crossover audience, but regardless, it doesn't matter because this show is so amazing. It's so funny. Paul and Wayne, the way that they riff off of each other and the way that Wayne picks shit that really pisses people off, including me yesterday, because he kept, God fucking damn it, Wayne. Justin knows what I'm talking about, but I don't want to ruin anything for their episode.
Yeah, no spoilers here.
But Wayne picked something for his best list that was on my worst list, we'll say. But yeah, they're an absolutely fantastic show. So I'm going to go ahead, throw to a clip of The Countdown here. We'll do our trivia. And I actually want to give a trivia update really quick in the third segment. But for now, we'll go ahead, we'll jump into this clip, and we'll be right back with our featured review of Beauty and the Beast.
Now, my number seven, you are going to take a huge 12 sandwich eating shit on me about this one. So let's just get into it, shall we? It's Saving Private Ryan. Yep. There it is. Yep. Conniption. There it is. There it is. He had a problem.
What?
Okay. Here it is, man. All right. This is a great fucking movie. It's number seven. Best War movie.
Let's listen to this. Dear listener, let's listen to Wayne dig himself an extremely deep hole.
No, this is not deep at all. I'm totally standing by this shit, man. This is totally...
Oh.
It's a great fucking movie, but maybe I enjoyed six more a little more.
This is going to be great.
Now, see, here's what happens.
Six films.
No, this is fuck you.
There
fuck
are
fuck
not six better films in Saving Private Ryan in the world.
I'm not. This is an insight into Paul's This is Paul's Commander Data being having fucking head going, okay? Because for Paul, all right, if the movie's better, it has to be the better one of those, like, that criteria that you're pushing up. But that's not the case, man. I know certain movies are better than other movies, but I like the less better movies better, so they're going to go higher on my list. This shit is absolutely, totally, completely
every
logical.
Every third or fourth week, I say, Wayne made the shittest decision in the history
suck
of this podcast.
Suck on these nuts,
I'll tell you what, this is top
all
five.
The
this
nuts
could be number one. Suck I'll have to go back and listen to 84 episodes to be sure. But this is
this hard. Is not number one.
This is one of the worst
nah,
calls
fuck
ever
off.
Made.
This is fine.
And I expect this Twitter to blow up over this. I will put it on Twitter.
Twitter will be fine.
Are there six better war films than Saving Private Ryan? Let's see yes or no. Let's see what we get.
I'm going to learn to use Twitter and then tweet battle you. That's what's going to happen. So, yes. So
suck
shit.
My dick.
Suck my dick. So, yeah, that's it, man. Saving Private Ryan is great, but I like some better. So, what are you going to do? What are you going to do other than blow a shit like Paul?
I'm sure there'll be some shit blowing. There'll be some yelling at their radio. People would threaten to climb through it.
It's
holy
fine. It's
shit.
Fine.
All right. Oh, what's your number one? This ought to be fucking amusing.
It's The Last Samurai. Son! That is the kick-assingest war movie ever. Yeah.
I'm out.
It was a war.
I'm done.
It was totally fun. Fuck you, man. This is great. How do you not love the... Actually, how come it's not on your list, bitch?
I do like the movie. I just don't think it was a war film.
It's a fucking war movie. There were two sides and one of them was Japanese. The other were probably British. Or someone.
British.
The British?
It was Samwise versus like the Imperial.
Civil War. Yeah, that's right. It was. Okay. American.
No. Like the Imperial Army from Japan.
White people. Oh, I see.
Japanese versus Japanese.
Yellow and Tom white Cruise. People. That's right. That's what happened now. But it was still awesome.
But it's your number one.
It is my number one.
You would know it like it back your head.
Oh, I basically remember the cool sword scenes and stuff. In particular, the sweet sword scene where Tom Cruise busts a cap on like seven other dudes with swords and even he didn't have a sword. But then the whole scene was like done in one shot. Fan-fucking-tastic. Far more entertained I was than in Private Ryan. So yeah, that's what I say, man. The Last Samurai. I can't believe it's on your list. That's it.
Believe it was and Platoon wasn't.
Yeah, easily. In fact, that makes complete sense in my brain.
Wow. My number one is obviously Saving Private Ryan. Apologies for the anticlimax, but I just can't bring myself to care anymore. I've almost lost the will to live.
Oh, suck on that dick. Shit.
This is the most ridiculously terrible list I've ever put together.
No.
About five or six, maybe
the
10
other
weeks
one
ago,
was, yeah, that was worse.
I put one together that was just garbage, but this is horrible.
This is fine.
You should go home and cry yourself. Oh, you are
I'm
home.
At home.
You should stay home and cry yourself to sleep.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Epic Film Guys March Trivia Game for 2017. This month, movie soundtracks, okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to take a 10 to 15 second clip of a movie soundtrack. We're going to play it right here. And then you have the opportunity to submit your answers for what you think that movie soundtrack is. If you get it right, you get entered into a drawing to win some sweet, sweet Epic Film Guys swag at the end of the month. Okay, so let's go ahead and play that track.
Back up in your ass with the resurrection. Is the group harder than an erection that shows no affection? They want to ban us on Capitol Hill. Cause it's die, motherfuckers, die, motherfuckers.
All along it was a ghetto, nothing but the ghetto. Taking short steps, 1 foot at a time, and kept my head low. And never let go, cause if I let go, then I'd be spineless. I'm going insane.
And that was it, that was the track. All right, so if you know what it is, you can get in touch with us. You can call the Fan Views line, okay? You can email us at epicfilmguysny@gmail.com. Get us on Twitter. Get us on Facebook. Get us on Instagram, wherever and however you let us know. Please do, and we will get you entered automatically for a drawing for an Epic Film Guys classic t-shirt at the end of the month. Simple as that. All you got to do is know what it's from, okay? So please let us know, and thanks for playing.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for sticking with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. It is now time for our featured review on this episode. Myself and Loisos had the opportunity to see the brand new live-action adaption, for the most part live-action adaption, of Disney's most memorable and beloved film, Beauty and the Beast. Okay, so I've been anticipating this film for quite some time. I know you have, Brian. This shouldn't be that hard. We both had a lot to say about this movie after we got done seeing it. We sat down to talk a little bit about it. But for those listeners out there, like the one or two people in the entire universe, Brian, that don't know what this film is about, could you just, you know, enlighten those listeners on what this Beauty and the Beast movie is?
Sure. Well, it's the exact same goddamn story as the original. Basically, it's about Belle, who is independent young woman who is taken prisoner by a beast in his castle, and she starts to befriend the beast and look beyond his hideous exterior and realize the kind heart of the true prince within.
Okay, so this is not anything new to those that are familiar with, especially the original film, which is in its own right is a classic. It is my personal favorite animated Disney feature of all time. I did rewatch the original on Blu-ray the night before going to see the new one. That was probably not the best idea, especially because, you know, going into a remake of any kind or a reboot or anything like that, you really want to try your best to separate the items, or the films, I should say, to kind of give the new version an open shot. Now, obviously, this is pretty much a straight-on remake of the original animated film with just a little bit of added stuff in there, here and there, a little bit of added backstory for Beast, and a little added backstory for Belle, you know, just with live-action actors and a shitty-looking CGI Beast. But I'm going to throw it to you, Brian, because I know you had a lot to say about this. Let's just start with your first initial thoughts on the film as a whole.
It was all right.
So that's it. It was all right. Okay.
Yeah. I have a little bit more to say. My brain doesn't really know how to articulate my feelings on this movie. It kind of exists on this weird nebulous plane where I can't comfortably get a grip on what to even say about it. It was made to make money for Disney, of course. But why was it made? Why was I sitting in the theater watching a $160 million live-action, practically scene-for-scene remake of one of the most beloved, widely acclaimed animated films of all time?
Why? Because you love Disney. Well, that's one thing about you that I know. You love Disney.
I know, I do. But why was I sitting in the theater watching Beauty and the Beast when I could have been at home watching Beauty and the Beast? I don't know. Beauty and the Beast is not a terrible movie. In fact, it has a lot of things going for it. The cast is incredibly charming, and the costume and set design is lavish and very expensive looking. The musical numbers are well staged. I laughed. I got goosebumps a couple times. So in that respect, I can't say that the film wasn't effective. But I feel like the original, and I know that there are a million adaptations of this story, so when I say original, I mean the 1991 Disney film, which I watched so many times as a wee little lad, is practically burned into my brain. So whenever something was a little bit off, for example, if an actor was saying a line and put the inflection on the wrong word, or if they changed the dialogue for no real reason, or if they added a scene that felt like pure padding to make the film 2.5 hours rather than 90 minutes, I got really, really annoyed. So the whole time I was on a pendulum, swinging back and forth between being enthralled and being frustrated beyond belief. And it made for a very uneven viewing experience. I liked the movie, I guess. I'll probably never watch it again.
Yeah, that's the first thing you said to me. We are both in the same showing. I'll say this much. The film looks great. It's beautiful. It's stunning. It took me to a fantasy world, very much within the likes of like Pan's Labyrinth. That's what immediately came to mind. That kind of visual sense was thrown into this film. I knew to leave my expectations at the door. I really did. Now, the trailers blew me away. So to answer your question, why were you in your theater seat? Because you were excited, Brian. We know you were excited. You know that I was excited. We both had our doubts, but we both listened to the full brand new score for the film. The trailers, like every time I saw the trailers in theaters, I almost teared up. Okay. So I'm this dude, right? I love tough guy, hardcore, brutal, badass action films of the 80s. I love horror. Horror is one of my favorite things in the world. But when I throw in Beauty and the Beast, the original animated feature, at the end, when Belle utters the words, "I love you," to Beast after he had just gotten killed, he's dead, he dies, tears tears on both sides of my face roll all the way down every single time because that scene has hit me ever since I was a kid, and I love that scene. So going into this, leaving expectations at the door a little bit because, you know, you kind of have to. There was early word about it. The Rotten Tomatoes score wasn't that great. Critics seemed pretty divided on it. I went into this thing just hoping that I was entertained. And, you know, I have to tell you this much. The opening of the film, it kind of took me out of the movie a little bit. It was just really strange. The opening scene is like a ball at the prince's castle. And it just, it seemed a little bit outlandish for a Beauty and the Beast movie.
It's really off-putting right away. They ruin the prologue. And I'm going to say this too. Most of my complaints with the film are purely nitpicks, and I realize this.
Yeah.
Because overall, the film is very well put together. But like I said, every time something was a little bit off, it really took me out of the movie. In the original film, all we see are stained glass windows, and you use your imagination of what happened and the narrator's, you know, telling you what happened in that awesome, like, deep voice. I think that's David Ogden Stiers, who also did the voice of Cogsworth, but he has this great voice where he, you know, once upon a time, he has that great, like, narrator voice. And in this, I think it's Emma Thompson plays Mrs. Potts in the film who's doing the narration, but she doesn't have the right tone of voice for this kind of storybook opening. Like, the line in the original when the narrator says, like, "Who could ever learn to love a beast?" It's so great. And then in this, it's just like, "Who could ever learn to love a beast?" And it's like,
I know.
No,
I know.
You're not saying it right. And I know that like it's a new film. It's a new interpretation. And the fact that I don't like it is my own fault, I guess, because I'm just, the original is so burned into my brain that when it's not right, it annoys me, and I don't know how to explain it any other way.
Well, it hurts. It hurts for the simple fact that this isn't, you know, a remake in the sense that they're trying to do their own thing with it. They are literally almost shot for shot remaking the original animated film with the same characters, just live action.
I wouldn't say shot for shot. I'd say scene for scene. It's a scene for scene remake.
Okay, I can agree with that. And they're just adding in bits and pieces here that make it a longer film. They're not trying to like jump right in and do their own thing with it. For example, like what Disney's planning with the new Mulan film. With that, they're trying to remove the musical aspect of it altogether. In this, you know, the music is very important to the story, so they kept a lot of the same songs. They added new songs. But let's move on to the cast, because the cast is so important to this film. And a lot of people, including people I know very closely, my wife, my kid, a lot of people I know, were extremely worried about Belle being portrayed by Emma Watson in the film. A lot of people weren't sold on the trailers, and for the simple fact that after listening to the score itself a number of times and the trailers, she's definitely auto-tuned to death, okay? She sounds good in the film. Her singing is fine for what it is, but she's not a classically trained singer in the sense of, you know, like the great Broadway people they had involved in the original film. So we get, you know, a good actress, so to speak, in this role. What did you think of Emma Watson in the role?
Well, I thought she was great. I love Emma Watson. I think she's a very warm screen presence, and she's just very likable. She fits the character of Belle. She's beautiful. We all know her as Hermione from the Harry Potter films, who is, you know, who loves books and is very intelligent. She sticks to her morals, and she's very, you know, she's a very feminist character. So you could make the argument that she's getting typecast a little bit in this kind of role, but when you play a role and you play it well, then studios are going to cast you because, you know, they know that you can play that type of role. So, you know, and people harp on her singing. I think she did a fine job. She was obviously run through a dozen filters. But just the tone of her voice I liked. She has a very, I mean, obviously she's not a trained singer, but it's very naive, very innocent. It has a bright, clear tone to her voice, and she has a little bit of a vibrato. So I thought she did fine. She carried her own, and I thought she was a good choice for Belle. What did you think?
I absolutely really, really enjoyed her take on the character. The only issue I had at times, I forget what the term is when an actor is interacting with digital elements, CGI characters. Sometimes she was kind of looking at nothing, and you could tell she was looking at nothing. Her eyes seemed to like wander a little bit when she's looking at, you know, Lumiere or Cogsworth or even Beast in some scenes. She's supposed to be looking him right in the eyes, and you could tell she's trying, like she's looking at the actor with the mocap suit on. I'm not sure how much Dan Stevens did himself as the Beast, because I haven't watched the behind the scenes stuff, but she seems sometimes to be kind of like blindly glancing at nothing a little bit. But other than that, like, I thought her performance was pretty good. Everyone's auto-tuned today, ladies and gentlemen. Every single pop star is auto-tuned. Any kind of musician in this day and age, for the most part, has some kind of digital alteration to their voice in some respect. So that didn't bother me all that much. I just, you know, she was good. She was fine. But I'm going to get to the show stealer here. I'm going to get to the best part about this film. The part that I loved so much that my number rating would probably be way less without him. It is Luke Evans as Gaston. He entirely stole the show. He had so much charisma in this role. He played it with an ace in his hand. Like, he literally put so much effort into this character. It was the animated version come to life for me. It definitely was. And his singing, because he is a classically trained vocalist in that sense, was absolutely amazing. I was blown away by this character. Every time he left the screen, you know, usually in Beauty and the Beast, like, Gaston's always been one of my favorite characters, but when they're in the castle and it's Belle and the Beast interacting with all the different items, that, you know, Cogsworth, Lumiere, Mrs. Potts, I look forward to that. But in this film, I couldn't wait to get away from the Beast and Belle and see more of Luke Evans as Gaston. I thought he was fantastic in the film.
Oh, I loved him as well. He was by far and away the MVP of the film. He was funny when he needed to be. He was scary when he needed to be. I never thought I would be rooting for Gaston in Beauty and the Beast, but he was the best part of the movie. Did you notice that they changed the character? And I don't know why they did this, but in the original, when Gaston sees Belle with a book, he says, like, you know, what are you reading this for? And, you know, women shouldn't read. They'll get ideas. But in this, she has the book and he's like, oh, what book are you reading? And she's like, oh, you know, whatever, whatever. Have you read it? And he said, well, no, not that one. And then she, like, completely blows him off as if he, like, is insulting her. And I'm like, he's not really insulting her. Why did they change it like that?
The updating of the characters, for me, whenever they tried to update the characters, didn't work at all. Now, you had mentioned a critic making a statement about how this is the brand new modern version of a feminist Belle in this film, and I did not get that at all. What did this character do in this film? Tell me, Brian, give me an example of what this character did that was like a modern feminist version.
Before I forget, I want to mention, like, we were talking about the age of the Beast, because in the original, he was like 11 years old when he turned into the Beast, and he had to find his first love before his 21st birthday. So he had 10 years. And in this version, he's already an adult when he turns into the Beast. So we don't know, first of all, how long he's been a Beast. It's never said. And second of all, like, one of the things that Belle and the Beast bonded over in the first movie was the fact that Belle knew how to read and the Beast did not, because he was, you know, he was at such a young age when he became the Beast. I can imagine, like, he wasn't fully literate. So in this version, he already knows how to read. And in fact, when Belle starts discussing Shakespeare with him, he basically, like, he's like, oh, I know all about that.
He, like, schools her, basically.
Well, he basically says, like, I know all about that already. And I'm so like, so what are they connecting over, really? I don't know. It was just like, whenever they changed aspects of the characters, it did not work at all for me.
For me either. And we're going to move on to that character we were just talking about, the Beast, played by the amazing Dan Stevens, who I absolutely really, really love a lot. He is the lead in one of my favorite films, Adam Wingard's The Guest, which is awesome to think that, you know, he was cast as the Beast in this, even though you barely see his actual face in the film. Now, listeners of our show know that when I've talked about the trailer previously on the show, I was not a fan of the digital look of the Beast at all whatsoever. I am a practical effects guy, even though I wasn't blinded by nostalgia here. I knew that they were not going to go the actual practical effects route. Disney is known for priding themselves in their current digital work, so I knew they were going to probably do a digital Beast. But did it work is the question here, and for me, it did not. I did not like the design of the character. I did not like the update. And in a world, Brian, where we have amazing mocap, such as Caesar in the Planet of the Apes films, or even, for example, I mean, Kong and Kong Skull Island, while not like the best example, still looked good. In this case, I'm surprised and shocked that Disney went with this quality. I mean, I expect a little bit more from them. I think a lot of the other digital work in the film is fantastic, especially the environments. They're absolutely stunning. But Beast, I couldn't buy it, man. I really couldn't. I tried so hard. There were some close-up shots, and I'm like, okay, it looks fine. It looks good. But whenever they were, like, walking around and talking, and we had Emma Watson interacting with this digital Beast, it didn't work for me.
When we saw the trailers for Beauty and the Beast and the posters started coming out, like, you were kind of very negative on the design. And I was the one who was like, well, no, wait, let's see what he looks like in the movie. And I was not criticizing the design, because I thought that, well, maybe in the film, in the context of the film, it'll work and it'll come across as being really cool looking. And I have to admit, I was wrong. I did not care for the design for the Beast at all. He's not beastly enough. He doesn't, like, again, in the original, the Beast crawls on all fours and is very animalistic. And I think what Disney was trying to do, and I get this, they sat down and they're like, okay, how do we approach the Beast in this? We can't have him be too scary, because he'll traumatize children. We also need to make it believable that Belle will fall in love with a monster.
With an animal, with a giant animal.
Yeah, basically. So I think what they tried to do was they wanted to have the Beast's face be very expressive, and they wanted to have the characteristics of Dan Stevens, the actor. So what ends up happening is you have a Beast with, like, big, bright blue anime Disney eyes, and it's not threatening or scary at all. And the Beast has human teeth
for the most part. Like, he's got the two top fangs instead of them being
two
the bottom fangs.
Yeah,
and this is nitpicking
top fangs.
But I mean, whatever. No,
it's nitpicking, but my criticisms with the film were nitpicks. And again, it's not necessarily the fault of the movie, but it is kind of because again, when you have a film that's so beloved and iconic as Beauty and the Beast, if it's wrong, then I'm gonna be annoyed by it. Usually, they gave the Beast like a sexy,
the lips,
they gave him,
he was a buff Beast. Yeah, when he took his shirt off, you could see his pecs, dude. He had Beast pecs, dude.
He had Beast pecs, he had Beast abs, and it was so bizarre and off-putting.
You know what, I'll just be honest, I don't think it was just bizarre and off-putting, I thought it was stupid. I didn't like it, okay? It looked like a human face with a lot of hair, like a bearded guy with a weird nose and huge, huge, huge horns on his head.
Papa?
Belle, you must leave here. This castle is alive.
Who's there?
Do you wish to take your father's place?
Come into the light.
Show me the girl.
Look at her. What if she is the one? The one who'll break the spell.
Hello.
You can talk.
Well, of course he can talk.
Hello. Pleased to meet you.
The Master's not as terrible as he appears.
Think of the one thing you've always wanted. Now find it in your mind's eye and feel it in your heart.
No!
Don't be afraid.
I'm not afraid.
We have to talk about that elephant in the room before we go any further and get to our final thoughts on the film. Josh Gad as LeFou, and that whole Disney gay moment that caused so much fucking controversy, which to me, after watching it, I was like, they could have not even mentioned it in the first place, and it wouldn't even have been a big deal, in my opinion, because it was nowhere near this. I mean, Josh Gad plays a little bit stereotypical gay dude. The guy is very flamboyant, all over the place, and, you know, like, to me, I don't know if gay audiences are embracing it, or they're just kind of like, oh, so this is what you think of us? Because the moment at the end, the supposed dance sequence, that's like a split second with another dude.
It's literally a second long.
It was in no means, like, by no means anything that should have been publicized to the extent that it was. No one should have a problem with that. It's nowhere near stuff we see in other films. So what did you think, Josh Gad as LeFou and that whole situation?
I think it's much ado about nothing. It just adds up to, okay, he's dancing with another man.
Another man that's dressed as a woman, basically.
I liked Josh Gad in the movie. He was funny. I laughed at him. I could see how his portrayal of a gay man might be seen as stereotypical, because he is very, you know, foppish, and he has all of these, you know, kind of hand gestures, and he has these little, he like says things under his breath like, okay, you're laying it on a little bit thick. But, you know, I thought he was fine.
I thought he was good in the role. I thought he did a decent job. But at the same time, I feel like what he put on was, in my opinion, just a stereotypical flamboyant gay dude. He was funny. He had some awesome quips in the film. But aside from that, I feel like I'm going to leave the rest of the cast behind, because I feel like everyone else we saw, for the most part, we just heard their voices as they were voicing these CGI characters. And I feel like, for the most part, they were all done pretty well. I think the standout for me was Emma Thompson as Mrs. Potts, especially yes. Her singing. She was probably the best. The rest of them, you know, it could have gone either way. I didn't really care that much.
Ewan McGregor sounded like Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah, he was probably like one of the weaker elements. I have no idea why the hell they cast a Scottish dude to do a fake French accent. Like we had talked about it. You know that the French accent in the original animated feature is like really eccentric. It's very exaggerated, so to speak. But in this case, it just sounded like a really, really bad attempt at a cheap French accent. So I don't know.
And I love Ewan McGregor. He did a Southern accent in Jane Got a Gun, and I even liked him in that movie, but he just couldn't pull it off. Like, what if she is the one? Ho ho. It was like very like exaggerated and just painful. I couldn't get past it.
Yeah, I thought he was one of the weaker links. But moving on, before we get to our final ratings, let's just go ahead and talk about one of the most important aspects of this film, and probably the most important aspect of the original film, the music, the musical pieces within the film. I will tell you this much. The opening, quote-unquote, in parentheses, bell song introduction when she's in the town and she's walking through the town and we're getting to see her interact with all these different town characters, I thought it was amazing. I almost teared up completely and was like so excited because it's the song. It's the song that we know and love from the original. And I felt like it was done great justice. I really didn't hate any of the changes in the songs at all. I thought they were very much done justice. What did you think about the songs?
Like I said, the musical numbers were all very well done. Again, they changed some things because I feel like no one would believe that Luke Evans singing Gaston, and there's the line about like his biceps to spare, and people were like, well, I mean, Luke Evans is fit, but he doesn't really have biceps to spare. I don't know what their thought process was in changing these lyrics. Is Luke Evans not covered in hair? Could they not have that line? Is that considered politically incorrect nowadays? I don't know. The musical numbers were all very well done, in my opinion. I love, and I mentioned this before, but I love Evermore. That's one of the new songs. And
it grew the on other, me, yeah.
The other new songs I could give or take, but I love where it is in the film because Beast is singing about the fact that he's never going to see Belle again. It's when he lets her leave the castle to go to her father, and he's singing about the fact that he'll never see her ever again, but he'll still be there waiting for her forever.
Right.
And I think that's such a powerful moment. And the fact that they extended that moment just to let it simmer a little bit, I thought was very, very good. And it's like this power ballad, and Dan Stevens gives it his all.
He sounds great.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed that musical number. I think it's one of the more positive additions in the film in terms of the stuff that they added. It just makes the most sense to be there as opposed to some of the other musical numbers, which just feel kind of like placeholders or like padding.
Just put in there just to keep the runtime, the level of a regular live action film. So that's great. I did like the musical numbers here, but there are some updates in here that bothered me a little bit. And we are going to get into spoiler territory, ladies and gentlemen. You've seen the original film, and these things are very minor to the story because, for me, they did not have a strong impact. Now, in the original film, we see that Belle is living with just her father. They make literally no mention of her mother, where she was, what happened to her, why that she's just living with her father. And in the original film, we don't know anything about Beast's parents. Why was he home alone at the castle when the Enchantress came and then turned him into a beast? Where are his parents? They didn't turn into like a fucking candlestick or anything in the original. So in this film, they provide a backstory for both Belle's mother and for Beast's mother. And this is something that at one point in the film is supposed to connect these characters and make them bond even closer and grow these characters together to see them progress within the film. However, the way that it's done, Brian, it does not work. It should be connecting these characters together and making them fall for each other even more. It's a common bond between the two of them, and it doesn't work because they don't do anything with it. They introduce it, you see it, and then they never mention it again the rest of the film, Brian. So for me, that was a huge fail. I didn't understand why they would introduce such a strong story element to these characters and not actually work with it. And going back to what you had said, why did these characters fall for each other? They didn't really give a common bond between the two characters to make them actually fall in love, in my opinion, as strong as the original film did. And that's something that I feel like should be an easy task. Now, I know that Bill Condon, okay, this is a guy that directed this film. He's known for being involved with, yes, the Twilight series. Yes, this guy had his hand in two of those movies. You know, and he directed a Candyman film as well. But
he also directed Dreamgirls, which is one of the greatest movie musicals ever made.
But, okay, so the guy has a hit here. He also makes some pretty trashy films. But not
Kinsey's
saying,
a good movie.
Not saying that he did a horrible job of directing, because for the most part, I think he did a pretty good job of this. But for me, the central connection between these two characters that is supposed to be the strongest thing about the film, Brian, that bond that makes you feel connected to them, just felt slightly absent there for me.
That's fair enough. I mean, I didn't really necessarily have a problem with the Beast and Belle's relationship. I thought that aspect of it was fine. It was like just the little things that really bugged me, like just the little nitpicky things that took me out of the movie. Maybe it's because I spent so much time looking for imperfections because it's a remake of a movie that many would consider perfect. I don't know. And maybe that's my own fault. And if you look at Disney's past live-action remakes, like, they had a few terrible ones with Alice in Wonderland and Maleficent.
Maleficent's one of the biggest piles of shit of all time. I hate that movie with a passion.
So yeah, they had a couple duds. And then a magical thing happened with Cinderella. They decided to tell the story and tell it right. And that was such a beautiful film. And then with The Jungle Book and Pete's Dragon, they're taking the original DNA of the animated classics, and they're doing something completely different with it. And this one didn't ride that line. It tried to update some things, it tried to do new things, but it's essentially
the same film.
It's the same exact movie. They didn't do enough different with it where I could separate it from the original, and the stuff that they added or changed didn't add up to much. So I don't know. I think that's my problem with it. That's the inherent issue with remaking something as iconic and universally beloved as this movie.
This is Disney's most celebrated animated feature of all time. You can disagree with me all you want. It is the first animated feature to ever be nominated for a Best Picture Oscar. And watching the documentary about the original film being made, there was an uphill battle. This was a huge victory for this team to make the original film. So Disney was going to make this one. If they're remaking every single other animated feature in their catalog, this was bound to happen at some point. So I'm going to give my final rating on this thing, then pass it over to you. I'm going to give Bill Condon's Beauty and the Beast a 6 out of 10 rating. There's more than a few issues that I have with it, as you guys have heard, but I didn't hate it. I still teared up in certain parts. I still got excited, and I loved the cast for the most part and the songs. It had certain elements that just sat perfect and others that didn't. So 6 out of 10 for me, and moving on to Loy Sauce for your final thoughts and rating.
Well, I hate to do this, but I'm also going to give it a 6 out of 10.
I hate you. I hate you. You're stealing my thunder there.
I know. The original 1991 Disney animated classic was just recently released on a beautiful, newly reissued 25th anniversary edition Blu-ray. Go out and buy that, and in the comfort of your own home, witness the magic of Beauty and the Beast. You don't have to pay $14 for a cinema ticket. Just watch it as it was meant to be originally seen, animated, beautiful on a high-def TV, and that's all you need. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what I say anyway, because this thing is making a buttload of cash. So see it or don't see it, I guess.
It's doing huge. It just broke Batman versus Superman's March record of last year. But this is Disney, and Disney is a champion. You know they're going to bank, and everyone knew this thing was going to destroy everything in its path for the March box office. I highly doubt that Power Rangers will even have a chance when it hits theaters this Friday against it. Hey, this is Disney. This is a remake of the biggest animated feature of all time. So it is what
it is. They rule the world. Disney, Star Wars, yeah. Lucasfilm, Marvel, like they literally own the world.
Exactly. But hey, with their power and their money, they should have done a better CGI version of the Beast. Just saying, they have the ability to. What the hell they were thinking and what they did with their work on this thing, I think they just dropped the ball. But that's our final rating here. Let us know what you think, but we're going to take a quick little break here, and then we'll be right back with our third and final segment of the show. We'll be right back.
Wait for me.
Okay. Yes.
ass out. If...
Kiss my ass.
Come I on, can't hear you.
I'll say it a little louder than get fucked.
Listen, loyalty is very touching. But it is not the most important thing in your life right now. But what is important is gravity.
I have to remind you, Sally. This is my weak arm.
You can't kill me, Matrix. You need me to find your daughter.
Where is she?
I don't know. I took those. I'll take you where I'm supposed to meet her.
But you won't.
Why not?
Because I already know. Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Matrix. You did.
I lied.
So now you don't have a car.
Now I do.
What'd you do with Sally?
I let him go.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for sticking with us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. And Justin, we completely skipped it last week. We didn't even mention it. But that was our featured actor for the month of March, Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Come on, get out.
And I even did the Predator clip just because you referred to Predator back during the Kong Skull Island review that we did last week. So I figured we may as well throw over to a Predator clip. That would be pretty interesting. So yeah, we've got a little bit of news and a little bit of extra information to dump on you here at the end of the episode. Pretty nice. It's going to be pretty smooth and simple as we float out of the episode here. I'm going to troll Justin with the soundboard, I'm sure. But first things first, we've been running this trivia game at the end of our first segments every single week. And I wanted to kind of give an update on who is correct and who's gotten some correct answers in so far to win some Epic Film Guys swag. And if you're watching on the live stream, you can actually see it over there on the right-hand side. For week one, it was Judge Dredd. And we only had one correct answer. That was Mr. Scott LaVar, one of our sponsors. Thank you very much. For week two, The Rocketeer, we only had one correct answer. That was Cameron Petit. Thank you very much. And for week three, now it was a piece of music from Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. But because it's the motif for the Shire and for the Hobbits, I decided to take Lord of the Rings as an answer. So director Brennick himself, Captain Beard 93 from the Beardo and Weirdo podcast, and Cameron Petit all had correct answers this week. I'm not sure what the clip is going to be for this week, but stay tuned. So everybody that has correctly answered so far, you're going to get an entry in to win a classic Epic Film Guys t-shirt at the end of the month. So we've got one more episode in this month after this. So, hey, who knows? You might win. So try to get those answers into us. And hey, send us answers even if you're incorrect. We don't care. Or we do. I don't know. Do we?
I care because I'm an asshole.
Damn. All right.
Yeah, kind of.
And now, Justin has announced, at least he announced last week on the live stream. Nobody got the chance to hear it unless you listened to the live stream last week. Justin is going to be taking a little bit of a break from the show. And
that is correct. Yeah. Might as well announce it officially myself. Depending on what you consider a break. I'll make my way in and out probably for April. We'll see what we do, what we have planned. But just a long-needed rest, some centering time to get myself on track with, myself. Things that aren't movie-related. Now, that's not to say that I'm not going to be still going to the movies every week and watching stuff. But, family time and maybe there's some few personal issues that I may be working out. You never know. We'll see what happens. But there are some movies that I definitely want to check out next month. We'll just go with the flow. But for the most part, Nick, we'll probably have some awesome star-studded events served up for you guys. Baby. There was one you wanted to talk about. I know that much.
There is, and we have actually earmarked the date for it now. We're going to be recording on the 15th of April, so that's a Saturday. If you guys listened back to, I don't know, it was episode 84, I believe, we had a bunch of different podcasts in the Movie Pod Squad. We had Who Spiked the Puns joined us, Fuzzy D, Chris from More Gooder Than was on the show. We had Jay and Dave from the Super Movie Brothers podcast, and Shampoo from Bud's Beers and Brutality We had an absolutely amazing time, so we are doing it again. Now, that one was just thrown together completely off the wall. We grabbed literally everybody that was available at the last minute and had an amazing time. This one we're planning ahead of time. I'm planning to get a lot more podcasters on the mic, and I've already got a bunch of different people that are already committed to show up. So if you are interested in being part of the next Movie Pod Squad Mega Blowout episode, please get in touch with us. Please let us know. Again, we'll be recording on Saturday, the 15th of April at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Okay? So definitely get in touch with that. I'm also reaching out and finding other people to do guest spots and fill in for segments, do things like that. Loy Sauce himself will be showing up.
Loy Sauce.
Yep, there we go. Loy Sauce will be showing up at some point during April. We'll, I don't know, if we see something, we'll do a review together or whatever else. Justin always hogs Loy Sauce all to himself when he's on the episode. I don't ever get to do any reviews with Loy Sauce, so that'll be a good time.
That'd be great. I also want to do a little something different. I want to do some written reviews over on the Epic Film Guys page. I'm going to be doing, since nothing really of interest is coming out in April, I want to review all of the Fast and Furious movies, because I've only ever seen the first two. So I want to do like a retrospective so I can see the new one when it comes out and understand what's supposed to be happening.
I'm going to do the exact opposite of that, because Justin from So I Married a Movie Geek has promised he's going to come on the show at some point in April. We haven't nailed down which date exactly yet, but we promised to review 50 Shades of Grey. So he's going to come on for that. And he wants to review Furious 8. So I'm actually going to go the opposite direction. I refuse to watch any of the other ones to get any of the perspective, and I'm just going to go into it cold.
The last one was good. I liked the last one quite a bit. But.
Well, that's because James Wan's directing it, and he's our Lord and Savior.
He's a great director. I love the shit out of him.
I don't have a Lord and Savior soundbite. Damn it. Well, we'll play. Let's see. Here we go.
Drink and drain him.
Eckhart's as close to a savior as we... All right, so yeah, that's definitely going to be happening in April. We've got so much more fun stuff. I did announce, and stay tuned for more details. We don't have a lot more just yet because I'm waiting to hear back from the actual charity, but we are going to be partnering with the Cancer Research Institute and raising money for cancer research for our first ever Epic Film Guys charity event. It's going to be a live stream, most likely a 12-hour stream, where we're going to play a lot of fun movie-related games and have a whole shitload of random people show up as guests and whatnot. We're going to live stream the whole thing. It's going to be an absolute blast, and we're going to raise money for a very, very, very good cause. I can't wait to release more details about it. I will hammer out an exact date at some point in the very near future, but it will be before episode 100, which is going to be in the beginning of June. So please stay tuned for that, and we've got a lot of just so much more fun stuff that's going to be coming up from the Epic Film Guys, so you've just got to stay tuned. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That is going to do it here for another episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. First and foremost, I want to thank Loy Sauce for being on the show. We absolutely love having you here, and you don't get the chance to stick around for a whole episode most of the time, so Loy Sauce.
Loy Sauce.
Thank you very, very much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, guys.
Thank you very, very much to everybody over on the live stream. Bill, Dan, David, the producer from The Unwritable Rant. Go check out that show, by the way. If you're not listening to The Unwritable Rant, Juliet will definitely be on our featured podcast segment coming up. Super fan of the show, Mr. Jared Taylor and Patrick Sherwood. Thank everybody very, very much for sticking with us over in the live stream. Justin from So I Married a Movie Geek. Dave
hey,
from...
You.
Oh, God.
Hey, the fucking... you didn't thank me yet. I should be the number one.
I knew I should have sped to the ending of the show as quickly as possible.
Every show, I should be the one opening the show.
No, my God.
Who are you to try to thank anybody else?
Loy Sauce, I blame you. You get to see him in person, and you need to just beat this kind of thing out of him.
I want you to send me a check for $500 by the end of next week,
please,
or I'll never be talking on this show again. I swear I'm not making anything out of this deal. Justin kicks me out every single time. He keeps telling me to go hang out with this Director Brennick gentleman. He won't have me. No one else will have me at all on their show, so I gotta find a way to make some goddamn money. Last night, I went behind the dumpster near this Ned Devine's Irish Bar. I think it was actually on St. Patrick's Day. and I was waiting around, and someone gave me a whole half a bottle of Jameson. Well, I thought it was Jameson, and then I started drinking it, and it was a whole half bottle of piss. I still think I might even have gotten drunk from it, though. I don't even know.
Oh, good for you!
Hey, who is that? Is that a new member of the show? What's your name, sir?
Get up on out of here with my eye hole.
We've got so many new people on the show that you haven't ever met, Mr. Hopester. I'm sorry.
Why are they on here? I should be featured every week and be making $100,000 a year from this piece of shit show. I don't even know anything about movies. People only come to this show for me.
This is what you get from this show right here.
0.0. Zero.
Yep, that's it. That's what you get from this show. Dan says he will give you ham fucking money so you can go fuck a ham.
Hey, I'll have sexual relations with the ham and then eat it afterwards, so I get to win in the end. Send it my way. Dumpster number
Game
two
over,
next
man.
To McDonald's in Herndon, Virginia. I'll be waiting.
All right, but I do have to take the opportunity to thank our absolutely amazing sponsors before we roll out on the show here. So some of them are in the live chat right now. Thank you very much, Dan, Director Brennick. Thank you very much to Caleb of Netflix and Swill as well. To our superfan, Mr. Jared Taylor, thank you very much. Our resident kaiju expert, Mr. Robert Moreno, Emily from The Story Behind, and Mr. Scott LeVar. Thank you all very, very, very much. Dan is sending Justin a ham, apparently. And
dude,
everybody that listens...
No, don't send it to me, because that means I have to go give it to the dude. Then he's going to want to come over. Then he's going to bother me for beer. You know, just deliver it to the McDonald's in Herndon, Virginia, and I'm sure they'll know that the homeless piece of shit out back will be here.
But yeah, everybody...
Okay, well, yeah, whatever. That's fine.
Thank you all very, very much for listening. For Justin, for myself, for Loy Sauce. I gotta play the soundbite more often.
Loy Sauce.
I don't think I dropped it enough this episode.
Yeah, I think 10 plus times is just not enough.
Loy Sauce.
Yeah, that's what you get when you get mouthy. All right, so thank you everybody very, very much for listening. And
we'll see you at the movies.
There won't be any live sound drop for that either.
What the hell am I looking at? When does this happen in the movie? Son, this is what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass!
That's what you call a dedicated, good, long-time listener of this show right there. Thank you very much.
I told you, I'm going to just be fucking Michael Winslowing it up.
Fuck you, Michael! You're a fucking piece of shit!
Who the hell is Michael Winslow? That's what I almost said.
I don't fucking know. I don't knucking foe. I'm the man behind the mask.
I'm the beauty and the beast.
That's the new version. I'm the beauty and the beast, Nick. Not just the beauty or the beast, but the beauty and the beast.
Yeah, the Hobster's the beast.
He's dead. He's gone. I heard he got hit by a car. It snowed yesterday.
We're not that lucky.
Well, he might be in intensive care, but I think he did get hit by a car, so I don't know.
Yeah, we're not that lucky.
Shut up, you weak, you baby! Shut up! Shut up, shut up, shut up! This is the entertainment you get when you listen to the show for, what, 80 episodes now?
Oh, my God.
sound clips embedded in your head because you've listened to every single episode. This is what happens, ladies and gentlemen.
By the way, once I finally do finish that best picture, once I finally do finish that
the best picture,
the best
dog.